Welcome to Parent Talk, the show for parents brought to you by the India Community Center every week. I'm your host, Vidya. Today's show is live and the call-in number is 510-770-1550. Now, May is Better Speech and Hearing Month. So to bring more awareness to the various speech and language disorders that kids face, I have with me in the studio, Namita Maunder, who is a speech-language pathologist. If your child has an issue with speech or language development, do call in to this live show at 510-770-1550. Welcome to Parent Talk, Namita.
Thank you, Vidya. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm very excited to share this early morning hour talking about speech and language issues with children and just in general, hopefully answer some questions that parents may have.
So what exactly does a speech language pathologist do?
Good question, because they're doing a lot of different things in the community. So basically, a speech language pathologist is a qualified professional who looks at, you know, who's looking at prevention, intervention, and assessment of speech and language disorders, along with cognitive communication, and also swallowing, and they're also in the field of early intervention. So these are kind of the areas that are covered by a speech-language pathologist.
So give me an example, and perhaps the most common speech issue that you yourself deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. Like I said, you know, because the profession of a speech-language pathologist is at different locations. They could be working all the way from infant to adults. In my experience, I work at a school district. I am a full-time employee at a school district. Mm-hmm. So I see children from preschool to elementary to middle and high. Mm-hmm. That's the range. I am working at an elementary school and preschool. Uh-huh. And so the kind of disorders that I see a lot in preschool and in my past practice, even doing a lot of early intervention, is, you know, when children are very young, so I'm talking about infants to 3 years of age, most of the time, the first thing that comes up is my child is not talking a lot.
Right.
There's expressive language delay is what they're, you know, what they're looking at or talking about. And that is the most common one, that my child is not saying enough words or talking enough. Mm-hmm. And then as you go to elementary school level, my caseload right now includes a lot of children on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And as we know that, you know, with autism, speech and communication mm-hmm. is one of their main areas of deficit. So I work with that. Then also, you know, I have a lot of children who have articulation disorder. Then I have
what does that mean?
Sure.
For our listeners.
Yes. You know, articulation is basically being able to say the sounds in speech. And that, for us right now, it's saying all the English, spoken English sounds in speech.
So like R or L, you know,
yeah.
those kind,
yeah.
those kind
so
of sounds.
So all the
okay.
phonemes mm-hmm. in the English language. Mm-hmm. However, you know, I do want to point out at this time that it is extremely important, especially in California and all over the world right now, that children come from a multilingual home.
Right.
And so they could have an influence of their primary language on the main English language.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, that is a very important factor when we look at saying, does this child really have an articulation disorder or not?
Or is it simply an inhibition from the vernacular?
Exactly. Or is mm-hmm. it an influence of their primary language over mm-hmm. the English language? So, you know, we have to keep that in mind when we are looking at articulation. How long has the child been exposed to English? Is this a primary language influence on, you know, is this an ESL situation?
Okay.
And then we get into that area. So that is the second. So going back to the types of disorders I see, so articulation, and then there is language disorder, obviously, mm-hmm. which is more like the specific language impairment.
Mm-hmm. Where that is, they are not at their age level appropriate command of the language. Is that what you would say is a language disorder?
Yeah, kind of like when you think of a child who's having trouble understanding in the classroom, the following directions, and also being able to express his thoughts and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So this does come across when, you know, they get a little bit older. They're required to do some writing work and they're struggling mm-hmm. in expressing their thoughts and ideas.
I see.
So we are seeing that these are the children who are more, you know, likely to be identified when they have to express themselves more, when they have to do this. So in mm-hmm. elementary years, I do notice that that's when a lot of these children are getting identified with speech and language impairment.
I have a couple of questions relating mm-hmm. to that. The first is that I know you see a lot of children on the autistic spectrum, but can a speech and language disorder exist on its own? Without necessarily having a bigger or wider diagnosis of autism or, you know, a larger communication issue? Can you have kids just with a speech and language disorder?
You know, a very good question. Because most of the time what happens, in fact, because I do the whole range from early intervention to elementary, and what I see is one of the first suspects or, you know, the reasons why parents have contacted a doctor or a speech therapist mm-hmm. that my child cannot speak,
right?
You know, and very often when we look further into this situation, that's when we find out that maybe it's not just speaking, but it had to do with autism.
Oh, I see.
So sometimes just not being able to speak is the first red flag that the parents see as something is not going right with my child.
It's a symptom.
Mm-hmm. And then when we look further into it, we can find out, by going through the whole assessment process, mm-hmm. we find out that, yes, that was an indicator, but that's not the only thing.
That's not the only problem.
So you're right that it can exist as the red flag for the first time, mm-hmm. but when we look deeper, very often, especially, you know, lately with the rise in better diagnostic tools and using better diagnostic measures, we are able to find out autism early. And one of the first red flags is being the ability to communicate that the children have.
Okay. And the not speaking is a fairly easy and, you know, symptom. And that is very obvious. Oh, my child is not speaking. But have you seen situations where there has been a speech issue that perhaps has been obvious to other people but not to the parents, where the teacher has said, oh, there is an issue going on here, but the parents haven't realized just there yet that there is an issue?
Yes, you know, that comes up too, because like I was telling you earlier about the specific language impairment, what happens is sometimes children are having trouble following directions, mm-hmm. right? They're having trouble doing things in classroom, which probably the teacher at that point might be the first person noticing it mm-hmm. because she's giving direction to a group of 25 or 30 children, and here everybody's lining up, everybody is going down, you know, doing their activity when they're told, but there's this one child who's just sitting there not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you're right, that teacher could be the first one who's noticing these issues
mm-hmm.
because what happens is the same child, when he goes back home, may have a routine which is very much taking care of him at all times. And he just does not get that opportunity to, follow directions because he's not given that opportunity at mm-hmm. home. You know, things are done for him. So, yeah, in those cases, teachers may be the first ones noticing some of these issues of following direction. And also, you know, sometimes the articulation issues that I was talking about mm-hmm. may spill over to writing, you know, spelling words,
mm-hmm.
you know, those may not be.
Does that also come under your purview?
Yes.
The understanding of language?
Right.
That's strange, because maybe when we were growing up, I would assume that either the child got sort of left behind because they're saying, "Arey, buddhu hai," you know, it doesn't quite get it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's a teacher's job to fix these problem kids, so to speak. But now we have identified it as an issue that is correctable, that can be given therapy and taken care of.
Totally. You know, and you're right. You know, there were so many myths about these kind of ideas. And I think the awareness and the knowledge and the depth of the profession is growing as the need is growing. You know, language is also looked as gain of literacy. You mm-hmm. know, it's becoming mm-hmm. part of literacy. So a lot of speech and language pathologists are taking more specialized training or continued education mm-hmm. and working more hand in hand with teachers in identifying some of the literacy issues which ties in with language, you mm-hmm. know. And that's how we have the same curriculum. We use curriculum to gain the speech and language part of it.
Okay.
So it's very hand in hand work with the teachers and a team approach, you know. Mm-hmm. And we see that we can benefit this child with the speech and language mm-hmm. issues to be more successful mm-hmm. in his academics mm-hmm. and that boosts his confidence and boosts his, you know, overall speech and language. Mm-hmm.
Can you quickly go over what some of the developmental milestones that parents should be looking at when, you know, if they feel, rather just to see whether the child is progressing at the right rate and whether a speech and language pathologist's services would be necessary?
For sure. You know, again, I want to highlight that definitely the first time when you go with your little one, an infant, and you start your regular checkups, mm-hmm. that is a very good point to make sure that your child is developing fine, you know, through all his speech and language skills. And we know that when an infant is born, crying is the best way to communicate.
Right.
And that is a sign right there that he's communicating. So there are very specific milestones for every 3 months almost that we're expected, that the children are expected to reach. You know, we know that every child develops at their own rate mm-hmm. and may have, you know, some may be faster in saying words than the others. However, there is a certain milestone that has to be met at every stage.
Mm-hmm.
And couple of wonderful websites which have very detailed information on every milestone is the ASHA.org, www.asha.org. That's the website where you can get any information related to speech language pathology, milestones, what to expect mm-hmm. in a visit. And also, I would like to give the, you know, there's another site of the National Institute of Deafness and Other Communication Disorders, that is nidcd.nih.gov.
And we'll put this up on our recording when we do the recording of the show. We'll put it up on the ICC website as well, indiacc.org. Please keep checking there for updates. On that note, I want to take a quick break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk more to Namita Maunder, who's a speech-language pathologist, about speech and language disorders in kids and how intervention and evaluation, intervention and therapy can help them. And now I'd like to ask Namita about a couple of more common speech issues that I think are prevalent and whether that is also something that's the domain of the speech pathologist. One of them is stuttering. Is that something that also speech pathologists deal with?
For sure. You know, stuttering is a big one when it comes to, you know, teenagers, adults. We have a lot of children who are diagnosed with stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's voice disorders and different kinds of voice disorders that have hoarseness, nasality, and volume as an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be, again, you know, a lot of these could be just acquired. You know, they're not born with these disorders, but due to different family situations or due to circumstances, these kind of disorders may come up. And, you know, rhythm, prosody, intonation, all these are things that are affect how we talk and mm-hmm. what we say. So a lot of it is like the nonverbal language, and all of that comes in the realm of language and speech, you know. So definitely the range is really big, and we briefly touched on literacy. That's again a new range mm-hmm. that wasn't like few
definitely
years ago.
Yes, that seems
so,
to be a new,
you know, all these
feature.
Things are coming up, and the range of things that we deal with and that relates to communication, the social interaction piece, that is a big one. So, you know, speech pathologists are probably the first person in the team who identify some of these problems. But I want to point out that one of the things that is a key to successful intervention or assessment is a team approach, mm-hmm. a collaborative team approach. What happens to this child, how it affects it in the family, how a team decides what the issues are.
Well, who are the members of this team?
A perfect question, because, you know, it's very important for parents when they bring up a issue and they take it to a school district or they contact the regional center. If the child is below 3 years of age, we want to make sure that the SLP is part of the team.
What is the SLP?
The speech language pathologist.
Okay.
is
mm-hmm.
part of the team. However, when a case like autism comes up, you know, the speech-language pathologist is part of the team, but we want to make sure, or typically the speech-language pathologist will make sure that this child is seen by a developmental pediatrician or a developmental psychologist who further, you know, is doing the evaluation and is part of the team.
So the idea being that if there are underlying issues, then it's important for those underlying issues also to be addressed and not just the SLP to be handling it on a superficial basis. Is
totally,
that the point?
Totally. And mm-hmm. and family member, you know, let's make sure they are part of the team at every point, whether it's early intervention or it's school. And in school, then we get into IEP formulation, which is the individualized educational plan, if the child has a disability. And in that case, you know, again, the input from the parents, what goals they want, how they want to work on them. It's a team approach. So every transition in the life of a child who has disability is a big step. And mm-hmm. we want to make sure that a team approach is happening.
So on that note, let's talk about early intervention and early evaluation. There's certainly, I think, in our community, some hesitation to go and approach a professional for issues like this, because we believe that these issues will get resolved on their own, or we are afraid of the stigma that's attached to admitting that your child needs external help. That's something that you as a parent cannot provide. But are there benefits to catching this really early?
Totally, Vidya. Very appropriate for our community, for sure. And then, you know, there's nothing that can be said on how important is early intervention, especially when we're talking about autism, we're talking about early intervention. You know, as when I have worked with children as young as a year old now, so the diagnosis is getting better, the evaluation system is getting better. So, you know, people are identifying children much younger who have the red flags, who are showing the red flags, and then intervening early is improving their chances of being able to communicate with their parents, with their loved ones. And, you know, the idea of communication is one of the most important thing that we all want from our children and from our adults. So it is the best thing that can happen.
We have a caller on the line. Let's take the call. Welcome to Parent Talk. May I have your name, please?
Hi, my name is Madhavi, and my question was, I know there's a lot of importance to early intervention, but let's say a child slips through the cracks because he's characterized as being shy, or the parents just don't believe there's an issue, and an issue probably surfaces much later. Is there any intervention, anything possible, say middle school and later?
Yes, you know, intervention is possible at all stages, is what I want to say. Madhvi, it's a good question to bring up that the child can fall through a crack when an assessment happens. So that's a very good point that you bring up. And what I would like to say to all my listeners today is that evaluation, you have to be an educated parent when it comes to an evaluation. You know, let's not make it just a one-shot 30-minute assessment that happened. You know, we want to make sure that when at the time of assessment is set up such that the child is giving his best performance. So if, say, they ask you, oh, when is a good time to do the evaluation, please don't take the child if it's a young child, don't take him at a nap time. Or if it's an older child, don't take him when he's very tired and exhausted. So it's the burden of giving the best performance lies both on the parent as well as the professional who's conducting it.
And I think also the question, as I understood it, was that could it be possible that people think that a child is shy, but actually there's a speech issue going on?
You know, that is a good question, and that can happen. The child could be, you know, not warming up, could be a longer time for some children. However, a good team, I go back to the whole idea of the team assessment. So what happens is, especially when we're talking early intervention, there is not just one person who's going to take a look at that child. So maybe the child who was shy did not connect with the, say, the physical therapist who did the evaluation, but connected better with the psychologist. So they do sort of a team evaluation.
I see.
And hopefully, I mean, that's my best guess, is that maybe that the child will warm up at maybe not one situation, but hopefully at the other situation.
So let's not jump to conclusions, but let's have many professionals look at the child at the child's best time of the day or mood of the day, and then make that decision.
Totally. And you know, one of the things that we try to do, especially when the children are young, during evaluation times, parents are involved. You know, there's parent interview is a big part of it. So even if the child is shy, say at the time of going through some standardized testing or assessment, the parent can put their input and say, you know, this is not how he is typically in his day. And I think a good evaluator will look at those comments.
Does that answer your question, Madhvi?
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks, Madhvi.
So coming back to, you know, I had another call from, I had another email from a listener before the show, and she asked that, can stress and domestic violence be a cause of speech development delays? Could it be possible? And on that note, I also want to talk about autism is, of course, a big, probably one of the big factors that you deal with when you are doing your speech and language therapies. But are there other causes as well?
Sure. You know, this is it's a very interesting area, and an area that could, you know, we can talk about for a long time about how are the environmental factors mm-hmm. influencing speech and language disorders. And that is what, you know, any amount of stress, domestic violence, or how a parent is disconnected with a child because of, you know, work pressure, or any other kind of personal relational stress on them.
Mm-hmm.
All this affects how you connect with your child. When children are very young, between 0 to 3, the brain, and there's enough research that shows that it is a critical time for language development. They need your interaction. They need your connection. And if you do not have the time to spend with them, and you are, you know, you are involved in a lot of stressful situation, then yes, that child may miss that piece of interaction through you. But, you know, as an educated parent, you know that this is an important stage for your life. So if it's you who's going through that period of stress, maybe there could be another caregiver who could, you know, be with the child in providing the speech and language
care. Speech and language issues can also be a symptom of underlying stress in the family, underlying stress on the part of the child, or not necessarily just at home. Let's not make parents out to be the villains here, but in school.
Totally. Mm-hmm. You know, they could be going to daycares. I've come across a lot of situations when families have opted for daycares. They were where, you know, they're going through different situations in life, and it's just, is my child getting that interaction? Is my child getting the stimulation, the language that he needs? And, you know, very often families will come to me, they'll ask me, because a lot of Asian communities have bilingual or multilingual situations. And very often I'm given the question, you know, I speak language A at home and my child goes to daycare where there's language B, and then he goes to school and he learns language C, that's English. So, you know, is that delaying my child's language and expression? You know, the answer is no. If the brain is a neurotypical brain, mm-hmm. and he's getting the language-rich environment, whether you're talking to him and singing to him in any language, what matters is how well you're giving the language-rich stimulation.
That's really interesting. And let's take another caller. Welcome to Parent Talk.
Hello. Hi. My name is Sheila, and I just wanted to have a question for my 3-year-old kid, who's I consider behind on speech. Mm-hmm. However, we have gone through a couple of evaluations, and he always comes on borderline. So we've never been able to get any help from the county, city, all these programs. And in his current school, which is a Montessori school, they say that he doesn't follow directions and you should take him out. He needs special education, but I just don't know where to go for help.
It's a good question.
Very good question, Sheila. You know, this comes to me a lot, you know, because I know that regional center or, you know, professional medical insurance, they all have, you know, certain criterias to define where your child should be, you know, how they meet the eligibility, and then they can provide intervention. Mm-hmm. However, if I were you, one of the first place I would go and talk to is my pediatrician. You know, your pediatrician should be the one who should be able to really go through the 3-year-old checklist, language, speech and language checklist, and you yourself can look up the ASHA.org website to see exactly what is expected of 3-year-old. If you feel like more than 50% of what he's not doing on the 3-year checklist is something I would be concerned about and talk to my pediatrician about, and hopefully you can get a referral to see a speech language pathologist.
Oh, via the hospital insurance route. But she has a really good point, because in these days of really limited budgets, my experience has also been that school districts, regional centers are reluctant to give you help if they feel the problem is not severe enough. They'll always be looking for reasons to say no. I mean, with the best of intentions, they have to help the people who they feel are in more critical situations. So in that situation, if a parent has gone to a regional center, has gone to the school district, and everybody says, he's okay, or he or she is okay, and they really don't need our kind of help, does the parent have other recourse?
You know, you guys have done some great talks on Parent Talk. You have talked about some of the parent support groups that exist in the community in the Bay Area, like the GINA.org, the PHP, mm-hmm. and those are your support groups. I would highly encourage you to look into some of that and see what is out there where parent support groups meet. You know, I myself have volunteered with some of these organizations. There are therapists who do this just because, you know, we are also frustrated with the red tapes that we have, the criteria that we have, because of which we cannot support. However, not to just say that, you know, everything is very difficult right now, I do want to point out that with school system, we're doing something, you know, more and more schools are looking into something which is called response to intervention. Now, what this means is trying to help children who have some red flags before they even come to special education. So this is a direct direction that overall is being looked at in the state of California. It's already happening all over the country, and there's a good response to it in terms of helping. And the reason for doing some of these programs is basically, you know, let's help these children who are not quite fallen that far below that they
right.
need special ed.
So they're not triggering the flags. What about private options? I mean, if is it affordable for an average parent to go and get the child privately evaluated? And does that evaluation hold merit in the school system?
Totally a good question again, because yes, like I was talking about that speech therapists work in different areas. So there are, you know, professionals who are doing private practice all over the Bay Area. There are people who specialize working with certain age group and certain kind of disorders. So I would highly recommend if you were seeking out for a private evaluation, you want to make sure, A, the person is credentialed. You know, there's a website I want to give you, which is called speechandhearing.ca.gov. This is a website which has a license verification. So you want to make sure that the person you're taking for an evaluation has a valid license. And, you know, most of the practitioners will have a valid license, but you want to verify that that their credentials are okay. And then B, the cost does run high. I do want to caution that. And, you know, this is a private practice, so they sort of have some guideline, but, you know, they can charge what they want. And B, whether your question about whether this kind of evaluation will be valid when they take it back to the school district, mm-hmm. it's a good set of information, but, you know, I cannot stress the fact that the school district and best practices calls for a team approach. So what that means, and a collaborative approach. So they will look at your evaluation. It's not that they will not, you know, look at it and take some basic baseline from that, but they will do their own evaluation for sure. So anytime you pick up a phone, your child is 3 years plus, and call the school district or call your local school and say, you know what, I think my child has a speech and language problem and I need an evaluation, and give it in writing. The school district by law is in California is going to respond to your request and provide you an evaluation. So
Sheila, does that answer your question?
Actually, I have a follow-up on that.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, all the approaches that you have suggested, we've already taken those, like talking to the pediatrician, taking him for the school evaluation, and everything comes on borderline. It's like they say, oh, come back in 6 months if things don't get better. But at this point, when I'm getting complaints on a daily basis from the Montessori teacher saying he needs special education, you must take him out, I kind of feel helpless without resources, not knowing which school or which facility can I take him where he gets a little bit more individual attention and is able to cope up. So, for example, he knows his name. He would, like, respond to it. He would tell me it's his shirt, it's his, you know, he'll take his name and say, oh, this is mine. But when you ask him what's your name, 99% of the time he will not respond, and he will just play around and goof up like, oh, my name is Mummy, or something like that. So, you know, as a three-year-old, if in the class you are unable to take your name, they're saying he needs special education, and I don't know where to give that special education. So that's really, I'm in a very helpless state, not knowing what to do next as a parent.
Right, right. No, I understand that this is a very difficult situation when you have to. So is he 3+ at this point?
Yes, he is. He's 3.5.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, what I would say is, like, so I'm assuming that you had an evaluation from the school district at the age of 3. Like, there
yes.
was. Did you go through any early intervention program?
We did, and at that point, again, they said, okay, we can try giving him some speech therapy, and as soon as he was 3 years old, they said, oh, you go to the school district now.
Right.
So he probably received speech therapy for once a week for about a month, and then he turned three, and so he was moved to the school evaluation, and then there they said, no, he's fine, he doesn't need anything.
Right,
and
right.
I do see improvement in him, but there are certain things that kind of bother. You know, that as a three and a half year old, you would expect them to know.
Sure, sure. So I would highly recommend you to look at that ASHA.org website. Again, look at the checklist of what developmental milestones are expected out of three. And, you know, if the school district said, just give him some time and you are seeing some improvement, that's a good sign, right? But however, if they told you wait for 6 months, I would go back and knock on their door definitely in 6 months to say, or you can go earlier, you know, you can go earlier and check with your school district to say that, you know, I'm still concerned and he's still falling behind. But I would also check in with my pediatrician to see if he could make a referral to a speech language pathologist.
Okay. And we have gotten a private evaluation done at Stanford, Lucille Packard, already.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they say the same thing, that he's doing fine, maybe at the borderline, at the lowest spectrum of a normal range.
Right.
But then when I hear it day and day, every day in from his school, complaints coming, that really frustrates me, because I don't know what to do, because I sometimes feel the teacher is probably not being fair, because she has to put an extra effort on him compared to other children. But at the same time, I want to give him all the help that he deserves at an early stage, but I don't know which school or which organization or who will be willing to take my kid in, I think is what I am trying to resolve in this call, if it's possible.
Yeah, you know, I hope I had all the answers, but I can only point you to certain directions. One other thing that I would highly recommend is also kind of looking at how you interact with your child, you know, taking a step back and thinking, am I doing enough of a language stimulation at home, or is there anything that I can do that would help him more with his language? The second thing I want to take a stab at is, you said that you're a little bit frustrated with the teacher's, you know, reasons and issues that she's bringing about it every day. So I would ask the teacher maybe to be more specific, you know, give, when she says, oh, he's not following direction, or he's just, you know, being difficult or something like that, I would ask the teacher, can you please give me very specific example as to what is it that you're finding difficult with him? And please give it to me in writing so I can share it with my pediatrician or an evaluation. And at that time, she has to think exactly where he's having trouble. And I tell you, sometimes just an exercise like that helps the teacher tune in better. So it's much more like not pointing fingers, but working together with her, kind of let's brainstorm, where is he having difficulty? Is it when you tell him to line up, or is it when you're asking him to do some independent work? Is that when he's having difficulty? So getting some more specifics from the teacher will help you and her brainstorm with, and, you know, kind of narrow down the areas where he's having issues. And those are the areas you can take it back to the pediatrician and really say, oh, it could be something related with hearing, auditory processing. So I would like to just leave you with a thought that investigate this situation a little bit deeper with less frustration and more like, okay, let me brainstorm with the teacher and try to understand what are the problems that my child is facing.
We are coming up on a break, Namita. So, Sheila, I will regretfully have to take a break now. Thank you so much for your call. And after the break, I want to just, on Sheila's behalf, just ask this question, and we'll try and answer that, is that Would it help to have a different school environment to see whether he behaves the same way in two different school environments? And let's take that quick break. We're talking to Namita Maunder, speech language pathologist, and it's a live show. So as you see, we've been responding to calls. If you have a call, 770-1550. Let's go to the break. You're listening to Vidya, and I'm talking to Namita Maunder, who's a speech language pathologist. She's been talking about speech language disorders in kids, how important it is to get early intervention, and also the website asha.org, which provides developmental milestones. So parents who think that their kids may have an issue can go and definitely look up those developmental milestones and make sure their kids are meeting those. We also talked to listener Sheila, who had an issue with the school, the private school, suggesting that the child has a problem. However, the child did not show this problem up in evaluations done by professionals. So there was a gray area in which many kids, I think even kids who haven't been evaluated, sometimes in classrooms, there will be kids falling in that gray area, right? But so my question is, if the parent thinks there is a borderline issue like Sheila did, is it really important to follow up, or is it you wait and watch till the situation deteriorates at that point?
You know, a very good question. You know, there's not one answer for it. It will depend on the child and the level of issue that you're facing. For example, if it's a young child who's 2.5 year old and, you know, he's not saying as many words and the physician says, let's wait and watch and maybe he'll get the words, right? There's a lot to be said about, you know, delay in language. However, I want to come back to the point that the parent is a good judge when it comes to knowing their children well.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
obviously, we're spending maximum time amount
exactly.
of time with them.
That's your yeah. world right there. So if you have a gut that, no, you know, my child is not at par, irrespective of me being able to provide all the language-rich environment, doing things that I'm supposed to be doing, I would go back. I would go for a second opinion, like you brought up earlier. You know, I would go to another doctor or another physician or another speech therapist if this one, you know, I am not comfortable with what I got from the evaluation. And it doesn't hurt. It's not just speech and language. It's with any kind of issues that we have. We mm-hmm. always want to go for a second opinion if we're not sure of ourselves in the first one.
Right. And in Sheila's case, I want to ask a question on her behalf, which is, would it help to see the child in another non-home situation, like a different school setting? Would she get some additional insight out of that, or it doesn't matter?
No, I think that would help. You know, if the other thing, like if I am a speech therapist who's dealing with this child who seems to be coming borderline, and like you brought up a very good point, not just seeing him in one environment. You know, I might see this child at his school, just an observation. Mm-hmm. I might see this child when mom says he's very animated and he talks a lot when he's at the park. So
okay.
I might even make an evaluation with this child and mom at the park.
I see. That's interesting. It's not limited to the school setting.
No, not at all. You know, we want the best snapshot of your child's language. Mm-hmm. And that's when typically a speech therapist wants to collect a language sample. And a language sample could be collected at a situation. For example, if I'm doing a child who's younger than 3, I might see in different situations, like going to the park or in his house or at grandma's house where he's more vocal. But if I'm dealing with a school age child, I might ask him to bring a book that is his favorite book
uh-huh.
and then use that to elicit language and collect a language sample.
So this is a good time for you to give me a snapshot of how the evaluation takes place. You've given some indication of that, but if you could just for our listeners who are parents and who are wondering, okay, when I take my child for an evaluation process, what exactly happens? So
yes, I know that, you know, there's a lot of legal jargon and things can get very complicated. It's not very easy. You know, there's a lot of emotion and stress running in the family when mm-hmm. you have realized that, oh, now it's my turn to do something about my child. And yes, one of the site, you know, again, asha.org is your website to know what to expect for an evaluation and prepare yourself. However, when you go for an evaluation, what you want to do is definitely create a history for your child in your mind or write it on a paper mm-hmm. where, you know, if they especially be aware, if you have an adopted child, be aware as much as you can of the medical history of the child. If there's been any kind of developmental family history, mm-hmm. you want to make mm-hmm. sure that you share that at the evaluation. Once you've done that, typical evaluation for speech and language will consider of some amount of parent interview and medical record review. So that is one mm-hmm. baseline information which parents should be aware of. And then what happens is the speech therapist would do a standardized assessment where they compare the child to his age peers and mm-hmm. tell you he's so far behind or he's at average mm-hmm. when compared. So they might use standardized assessment. Make sure you bring the child at the time that he's most responsive. Mm-hmm. That's your burden right there. Then once the evaluation is completed, it could be completed in one shot, or if the child is not engaging and interacting with the evaluator, they may say, let's schedule it at another time. And understand that that's for the best of your child mm-hmm. and, you know, getting the most language out of it. Then the next part would be sharing the results of the evaluation, which will be typically done at an IEP or at an IFSP if the child is...
What is an IFSP?
It's an Individualized Family Service Plan, which is made for children who are under the age of 3.
Now, we've talked a lot about early intervention, and I think we have just a minute or so to go. So I quickly want to ask this. What if the child is much older? Is it still, is there a time when you say now it's too late, or are there things that can be done even for children who manifest some kind of a speech or language issue much later?
You're absolutely right, Vidya, that early intervention is the key to success. However, whenever in our life we come across children or adults who are having speech and language problems, they should address it. You know, it does not matter what age you are.
You can still show improvement.
You can show improvement. It can make your communication better. That helps with your social interaction. That helps boost your confidence. That improves your academic, your career opportunities. So it's a whole gamut. Communication is part of your life all throughout, and you can only improve it, that's for sure.
This, at the school age, though, the resources available through the school.
There's a lot of resources available through the school, yes.
That's fantastic. I think that's our show for today. Before we go, I would like to bring two things to your attention, listeners. The first is Jina Yaha. Jina Yaha is an annual talent show put together by the wonderful kids of Jina, which is a nonprofit that supports parents of children with special needs. The show is on May 26th at the Jewish Community Center, and the tickets are available at jina.org. That's jeena.org. I've been to a couple of shows over the years, and I can guarantee that the performances will bring a smile to your face and a tear to your eye. And the second event that I want to talk about is a talk titled Don't Get Mad, Learn to Manage Your Child's Defiance by Dr. Lena Khanzore on May 10th at 7:30 at the India Community Center. Dr. Khanzore has been a guest on our show several times, so I think regular listeners will know how interesting and effective her advice can be. And if you're tired and frustrated because of your child's non-compliance and defiance, just go to ICC and attend this talk, and perhaps you can learn some effective parenting skills to improve your child's compliance in your relationship with them. And for more details, you can check out indiacc.org and look for the show. To listen to this show's recording and past shows, go to indiacc.org/parenttalk. Today, Namita has given us a number of resources, and after the show, when I put up the recording of the show, I'll definitely be sure to include all the resources for parents and the links that they can go to and check out in case they want to. And if you have an idea to share, please do write to me at radio@indiacc.org. Namita, thank you so much for being with us today. It was really a learning experience. I think I could have gone on for a little longer as well. And the show's producer is Saad Jafri, and the theme tune was composed by Naren Pradhan. Thank you, Namita.
Thank you, Vidya. It was a pleasure.
Tune in the same time, same place next week for another show on parenting. Till then, bye-bye.